So today it's my pleasure to introduce Vincent Rougeau, who's Dean and Professor of Law at the Boston College Law School. He previously served as Professor of Law at Notre Dame, where he was also the Director of the Center for Law and Government and Associate Dean for Academic Affairs. An expert in Catholic social thought, Dean Rougeau's most recent work is entitled Christians in the American Empire, Faith and Citizenship in the New World Order. His research and writing considers the relationship between religious identity and notions of democratic citizenship and membership in an increasingly mobile global order, one that's marked by certain regions of high levels of economic inequality and political instability. He is currently leader of a research group on global migration and cosmopolitanism as part of the Contending Modernities Project at the Kroc Institute for International Peace Studies at Notre Dame, which does a lot of excellent work. His AB is from Brown University, JD from Harvard Law School, and a member of the bar in Maryland in the District of Columbia, among other things. Hopefully we won't need
long
no skills today. So it's our great pleasure to have you here today, and he'll be speaking today about citizenship in the global city. And I'll flip your PowerPoint.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here. It's nice when you enter administration to remember that you used to do something else with your mind. But it also is a situation where, unfortunately, I don't get to spend as much time with this material as I'd like. But I hope we'll be able to have a really interesting conversation based on some of this work that I've been involved in over the last few years. And so what I'd like to do today is tell you a little bit, well, about the project that I've been involved in the context of looking at this larger question of the, I guess I'll use the term the global city. Increasingly we see urban areas developing around the world, and I'll focus from my comments on North America and Europe, that have become just magnets for people from all over the world. And it's doing a number of different things. First of all, it's one result of an ever-increasingly global economy and global mobility, technology. All of these things are fueling the sense amongst people that they can go wherever they need to go to make a life for themselves. And they're being drawn in also by those things. So our major metropolitan areas are becoming these sort of entrepôts for people from all over the world. And when I say all over the world, to use the United States as an example, and then I'll move to Britain, we understood in this country our immigration as coming primarily from certain places, certain acceptable places until the 1960s. Immigrants technically could only come from Europe, and initially only certain parts of Europe, and then that expanded obviously to include Southern and Eastern Europe. But our immigration policy was explicitly very racist until I think 1965, when people from Africa and Asia and Latin America were included in the quotas that have been set for immigrants. That doesn't mean that those people didn't arrive through various means, but the legal understanding of who could be an immigrant in the United States was primarily defined to certain, to Europeans, and then with much smaller numbers for people from these other parts of the world. Once that was lifted, obviously, the understanding of who was an immigrant started to change. We went through a period where, there was not a lot of immigration, and so a lot of the earlier immigrants were allowed to assimilate over a couple of generations. And so I guess there was sort of a loss of a cultural memory of the complications of waves of immigrants coming into a city or into a society. And so now that that's happened again, primarily in the United States, the most visible effect is with Latin American immigrants, primarily Mexicans. But we also see much more Asian immigration, African immigration, and that's challenging the American cultural mind to some extent to reimagine the notion of what it means to be an immigrant nation, because we're dealing with different kinds of immigrants. Well, the same thing is obviously happening in other parts of the world, and in Europe, what we're seeing is what I would call, and I'll talk about this a little bit more, and what other scholars have called this movement from the periphery of European culture to the center. So people who were part of the colonial periphery are moving into the metropolitan, into the metropole. So the French colonial empire is coming to France. The British colonial empire is coming to London. So in a sense, it's tracking a very similar group. I mean, it's Asians and Africans and Latin Americans who are coming into the European cities as well. And again, sort of challenging the notion of what it means to be a Londoner, what it means to be a Parisian. So we're seeing the development of a much more dynamically, when I say global city, because in a way, you know, the European immigration, which sometimes can be less noticeable, is now being added to by immigration from places where, because people look different, it's very obvious to us that we're living in a much more global city. So the picture that we started with, I think, is a demonstration of, I guess if I can go back to, well, I don't want to cause trouble, I'll get there in a minute. demonstration of this new reality. So the work I've been doing in London, which was originally called Just Communities, and it's now part of this project that Eric mentioned, Contending Modernities, it's asking the question of, okay, as all of these people come into a city like London and actually establish themselves in often the traditional working class neighborhoods of London, East London, what's happening there? What kinds of interaction are these people having? And are they actually being able to form a sense of identity and community and membership in London as potential new British citizens, or are they living in isolation and marginalization? Both things tend to happen around the world. I mean, in some countries, immigrants come in and they never really feel that they can become a part of the new country. In other countries, they assimilate much more easily. And there's all kinds of things in between. So the project we got involved with in London was one which was looking at how immigrants found a foothold in London, and what we identified was a lot of them were finding that foothold through religious institutions. So you would go to the old neighborhoods of East London, and it was the Anglican churches, the Catholic churches, and to a lesser extent some of the other Protestant congregations, which were becoming the focal points of a new understanding of community and a new understanding of membership. And from that point, a lot of these communities or these groups of people moved into this community organizing, which was being sponsored by a secular umbrella group called London Citizens. So from the little parish church in East London to the broad-based community organizing of London Citizens, we were trying to track, well, what's actually going on? Are these people actually coming into London Citizens and getting involved in broad-based community organizing and actually feeling like, you know what, this is a way for me to really feel like I am becoming a part of Britain, I am becoming a British citizen. So that's one thing. How are we developing a new notion of who are citizens? And then the second thing was how are these varied groups, sort of dealing with each other across boundaries in the community? So what happens when you have Muslims from the Indian subcontinent, Catholics from West Africa, Catholics from Brazil, Poles, the traditional British working class that's become very secular, all trying to live together in a community in East London and actually coming together to sort of forward a particular interest through community organizing? Are we seeing sort of a new formation of community in this new global city? So just a few themes that I wanted to throw out. So as I've mentioned, we're seeing these globalizing cities, and are we starting to see a new way of understanding what it means to be a citizen, what it means to be a member? Are we starting to understand new ways of forming civil society? In other words, I think what we're seeing is a challenge to some notions of identity and membership that depended heavily on, you know, a sense of, in Britain, Englishness, in the United States, a sort of, you know, Northern European, maybe initially an Anglo-Protestant self-identity that eventually encompassed certain Catholic ethnics that, I guess, in the United States basically became all-encompassed in this term we use, white, you know, as the way of saying who real Americans are. And now, as new cultures are penetrating, all kinds of challenges are being raised. So what we see in the United States is, you know, racial identity, the polar notion of black and white in the United States is breaking down and being challenged increasingly because of the new mixes of immigrants. And in places like England, the notion of Englishness is being replaced by this notion of Britishness, which is designed, or at least theoretically, it seems to be able to encompass a much broader range of backgrounds and identity. So that's one thing going on. The second thing, and what was interesting to me as a person who studies religion, is how is it that these people who are coming into these countries, a lot of them take their faith commitments very seriously. How are they integrating into what often has become a much more secular Britain or France, where they are very kind of sort of, you know, open and proud of their identity as Muslims, as their identity as Catholics, but they aren't traditionally French or British or American. And all these people who are finding themselves, you know, sort of lumped together in these sort of entry communities of the old working class parts of these cities, how are they getting along? What we started to notice is that a lot of people are coming into community organizing in London because of their faith commitments, because they feel very strongly that as a matter of faith, certain things ought to be happening in their world, in their communities, in the city. And they usually are grouping around sort of core social justice type questions, you know, living wages, immigration reform, crime fighting, and people feel that they have certain fundamental needs that aren't being met, and so the first place that they go is often to their religious community to kind of voice their concerns. So, you know, they'll go to the parish priest and say, you know, I cannot afford to live on what I'm being paid in London, and I'm working two jobs. Or they'll go to the Anglican vicar, sometimes even if they're not Anglican, because the Anglican church in Britain serves as a sort of neighborhood center, and make the same kinds of compliance. So what's been going on in Britain is the vicars and the priests are all starting to say, well, why don't we organize these people in the churches and get them to talk to one another and start confronting some of these issues in the public sphere. So what we call, usually in the United States, faith-based community organizing, and what they call broad-based community organizing, is this idea that people are coming from a broad range of faith commitments or personal commitments, sometimes secular commitments like trade unions, and, you know, forming these alliances. The interesting thing about this community organizing development in London, as it was the case in the United States, is that the glue for it tends to be Catholic social teaching. A lot of the values that are animating the organizing come directly from Catholic social teaching, and in London, it's been very explicit. So even in the sort of secular discussions of community organizing, there's a discussion of the fact that a lot of the values that are animating the work come out of Catholic social teaching. Now, I think part of this is strategic, because a lot of the groups they're trying to reach are Catholic churches, Catholic parishes. But the language also resonates with the Anglican parishes and resonates increasingly with a lot of the other religious participants in the community organizing. So we have this phenomenon where a lot of the immigrants are deeply rooted in religious communities. They're coming into what have become an increasingly secular city, London. The old guard of organizing the trade unions and such are still very secular, but they're suddenly realizing that in order to really expand the pie, expand the group, we've got to start speaking a different kind of language about why we do what we do. So they've been relying heavily on key values from Catholic social teaching. So a lot of the things that I've written on in my own work and that I've been studying have become a very important part of organizing across these communities in London. So we spend a lot of time talking about the dignity of the human person. Who am I as a person who has now come to this society as an immigrant, and I actually want to give voice to a concern? Do I have a right to speak? Do have a right to speak, how do I sort of exercise that right appropriately? You know, a lot of the immigrants will be very sort of hesitant to, you know, act up in their new countries. They want to live under the radar. Some of them are not legally there, obviously, but even the ones that are legally there feel a need to, you know, sort of live in the shadows out of a sense of almost politeness to their new home. But when the issues that are being dealt with really are basic issues of human dignity, you know, part of what we're doing in these organizing discussions is to say to them, you know, you do have a right to speak, and you need to speak because the society has to deal with the problems that you're raising. And that leads to the second big value of Catholic social teaching that becomes really important in this work, and that's the common good. How do we start to understand a notion of the common good in an increasingly diverse and dynamic society where people move constantly, where they come in and out of the society for different kinds of reasons, but they do feel a sense of membership and ownership to some degree, where we're thinking about citizenship in new ways, where, yes, I'm a British citizen, but I also maintain a strong attachment to India or to Brazil. this dual notions of identity. Again, how do you form some kind of understanding of the good we share in common? And Catholic social teaching at least has a rich language of talking about that we can bring into the public discussions that seems to work very well across faiths and across those other boundaries. The priority of labor over capital, that's a very important part of Catholic social teaching, allows us to talk to these people, many of whom are unskilled laborers, who are coming into a situation where, you know, they depend on an hourly wage, but their hourly wages, for instance, are being depressed because the idea is to get the most services for the lowest possible cost. And, you know, tapping into a discussion about the need for the economy to focus on the needs of human beings is another source of real strength in these conversations. So one of the things we're seeing in London is, you know, the needs that immigrants are expressing, or the abuse that many of them are suffering, sort of living in an underground kind of economics role, is allowing a broader conversation in the public space about what's really going on with our economic life. Are we really comfortable with some of the effects of globalization as they apply to the way human beings are treated, as they sort of affect the way that we understand our roles in the economy, or the way that the government is running the economy, and the way that other governments are interacting with our government over the economy? Universal destination of goods is another thing. What's driving this migration in many instances to big global cities? It's really people coming from poor countries trying to find a foothold in rich countries. That's not the only thing. But so much of this movement of the periphery to the center is a movement of people who are at the periphery not only of a colonial empire, but of the global economy in a way. They're seeing that if I can get myself to London, if I can get myself to the US, I actually have a chance to participate in the economy in a way that might bring some benefit to me and my family. I know that if I stay in Mexico or if I stay in Africa, I'm always going to be living on the margins. I'm always going to be living near destitution, or in a way that is not very much, doesn't sort of signal a dignified human existence. So we're drawing these people in because, you know, the inequalities of wealth and the benefits of the global economy are so unevenly distributed. So the fact that there is so much inequality in the global economic system and actually within a lot of countries is another factor that's creating these new dynamic global cities. Quickly, solidarity, subsidiarity, these are sort of very core ideas from Catholic social teaching. This idea of solidarity, that we can step outside of ourselves and see ourselves as part of something larger and you know, take some real power from the idea that, you know, we can be self-giving. And subsidiarity is the notion that, you know, there are some things that should be dealt with most properly at, you know, things should be dealt with at the lowest level possible in a sort of hierarchical structure of society. What should be dealt with at the neighborhood level? What should be dealt with at the local government level? What should be dealt with at the national government level? And part of what we do in organizing is that we're able to kind of stress the idea that certain problems that are generated at the grassroots level in the communities can actually be initially dealt with there, and when the time is right, you start moving up the levels. Participation is the other side of this. So how do we get these people who often feel that they're on the margins of society to feel like they can actually be active participants in a new kind of world that we're all sort of struggling to understand? What does it mean to be a citizen of a global city? What does it mean to be part of a multicultural society? These are all, you know, fascinating and important issues that we'll be thinking about in the next few years. And then the option for the poor, that really kind of connects to what I said before. What's driving a lot of the change in the world we're living in is inequality, poverty, lack of resources, and the fact that they're not distributed evenly around the world. And Catholic social teaching speaks very strongly and very forcefully to the idea that that we have real obligations to those in need, to the poor. I've really touched on some of these things already in describing Catholic social teaching values. This is a sense of the context in which we're working. We're increasingly talking about democracies that are starting to understand themselves in multicultural ways, or will need to do so. You have some that are very far along on the train, Canada. Others that are still sort of struggling with it in ways that we'll be dealing with for some time. Germany, places in Eastern Europe. Even Italy and Spain, and then you have places like Britain and France and the United States, which, you know, have a better tradition of being more diverse, but still have all kinds of questions about what that's going to mean for the future. But one thing I think we can say, and something I've done a little research on just looking at the United States. If you look at where the real sort of energy, economic growth, and activity exists in the United States today, look for the most diverse metropolitan centers. That's where people want to live. That's where companies want to locate. That's where research and development is happening, not exclusively, but there's a reason why our country seems increasingly bifurcated, you know, based on whether or not you live in, you know, an urban setting on one of the coasts or in the interior. Because I think people are living in very different worlds and they're seeing very different results of these global phenomena. So just quickly to end, so this is just one example of the kinds of sites you see now in a place like London. This is a major commercial street in East London. You know, you're not seeing, you know, Bobbies and Cockneys. You know? this is what you see, and this is not an atypical event on a Saturday in East London. But these are British people. These are British citizens. These are some of the organizing activities that the folks I've been working with are involved in. I don't do much organizing myself. I'm sort of the academic, kind of talking about it and thinking about it. But I've been in a lot of these things to talk to people. So one of the big issues, obviously, that we've organized around is immigration reform. You know, how are these societies going to deal in a humane and reasonable way with immigration? I mean, how are we in the United States going to deal in a humane and reasonable way with immigration? We have a real problem in this country in terms of how we talk about immigration and migration. It's I think, dangerous. It's almost offensive. And, you know, we haven't really dealt with it. They're much more, actually, farther along, I think, in Britain. I mean, the idea of an asylum there doesn't, you know, send people into, you know, complete screaming matches. People understand that once you bring people into the country, you have some obligations to them, no matter how they got there. So this was about. It was about coming up with an ordered way to create an asylum policy. I'm sorry, amnesty. I said asylum. An amnesty policy for people in Britain. The other thing that this is Rowan Williams, who just announced his retirement, the Archbishop of Canterbury. This has allowed really interesting opportunities for congregations and religious groups to come together and have conversations about the role that faith would play in understanding some of these developments in this work. Another campaign we had that was about youth crime. One of the things that unites a lot of people in these neighborhoods across ethnic and racial and religious boundaries is the fact that all their children are in danger. You know, the streets are not safe. There was a huge problem with knife crime in London a couple of years ago. And, you know, young people were dying, and that organized a lot of people across these lines to work for safer streets. And I could talk about some of the specifics of these if anyone's interested. Living wage campaign, that was what I alluded to earlier. Cleaners in the banks in Canary Wharf and in the hotels in London organized for better wages and organized to get a living wage, not the minimum wage, the living wage, and actually are being paid the living wage. So all the major banks in London are now paying a living wage above the British minimum wage, as are many of the hotels, based on this work. Same with the Olympics. So because of the organizing in East London and where the Olympics are going to be held, the community got involved and said, look, you know, you're saying this is supposed to benefit us, all this development is supposed to benefit us, but you're going to pay us the British minimum wage, and you're going to be making, you know, gobs of the money. How about paying us a living wage and making a commitment that all the activities around the Olympics will be, where all the employers will be living wage employers? And this started as a grassroots campaign in the neighborhoods where the development was taking place, and ultimately they were successful. I think now at 98% of all of the employers are paying them. So that's what I'm up to when I'm not deaning. And I'd love to hear your thoughts and to begin a conversation.
Great, thanks.